This is Second Look. I'm Bob Levicky, WMRE's news director. Thanks for tuning in, and stay tuned because we've got a lot to cover this afternoon, including the new program training welders in Buena Vista, thanks to a state grant, helping to fill a gap in the industry in the coming years. Jesse Nadler has that story. We'll also sit in on a community conversation about ALICE, who is not a specific person, but rather an acronym for folks who live above the poverty line but still don't earn quite enough to make ends meet. Calvin Penn has that report. We'll, of course, also check in with Jeff Shapiro to again review the week in Virginia politics. But first, let's turn our attention to one of the biggest stories of the week, both nationally and locally, and that was the student walkouts on Wednesday to protest gun violence in answer to the mass shooting a month ago in Parkland, Florida. Some students are speaking out to any politicians willing to listen with some version of, we're as mad as hell and we're not going to take this anymore. But in lots of places, many of the students own their own guns for hunting, or at least live in families that do. And so there, the focus was more on commemorating the victims without demanding action on gun control from Congress. We start with WMRE's Christopher Clymer Kurtz's preview on Tuesday, reporting on what some students and administrators had to say the day before the walkout.
The national school walkout for 17 minutes at 10 a.m. across the country is framed as a demand that Congress act meaningfully to do more than share thoughts and prayers, to pass federal gun reform legislation to address the public health crisis of gun violence, according to an online call to action by the Women's March Network. According to area superintendents, activities range from both a walkout and a walk-in at schools in Shenandoah County, to blood drives in Page County, a silent memorial and expression of anger over gun violence in Nelson County, and more. Superintendent Scott Kisner said in an email that Harrisonburg High School will have a voluntary student-led remembrance. Rockingham County Public Schools, too, has embraced events in its middle and high schools as a way for students to show empathy.
We've really tried to frame it as a remembrance event for the victims.
Doug Alderfer is the Assistant Superintendent of Instruction in Rockingham County.
We understand the horrific nature of gun violence, and we want to support anything that could help that be resolved. How that's resolved is really not part of what we're trying to push with this particular initiative. This is really for us more about understanding and realizing that this was a major event in the lives of high school students, not just there in Florida, but everywhere. And what you've seen from the surviving students at the high school there and their advocacy, I think it's been inspirational to students here as well.
At Broadway High School in northern Rockingham County, students with administrators are planning an optional presentation in the auditorium to commemorate the Parkland shooting victims. I spoke with four student planners there, all seniors.
It's more than just a number. It's a person.
Zach Wright said that making the school's event relatable and not political allows what happened to have an emotional impact that can continue to shape change rather than get lost in a focus on politics.
These are people just like you, and they had dreams just like you had dreams. They wanted to go to college. They wanted to be a professional athlete. They wanted to do all these things just like you. And they can't because of this.
The Parkland shooting and others have impacted students at Broadway. Brooke Mormon.
It makes you just think, if it can happen there, it can happen here. It can really happen anywhere. And it makes me sad just that that continues to happen. And, I mean, it does make you, anyone, a little bit more scared to come to school just because, it continues to happen.
I asked them about the National School Walkout's call for gun legislation.
Students are able to take the presentation as they want. If they want to make it about gun control, then we can't necessarily stop them.
This is Keely Yost.
But we're just trying to remember those who lost their lives. And I think that given that this place is very well known for guns, that we know that that could spark tension around here and have problems if we tried to carry on like that. And that's not what we're doing at all.
Her sister, Lindy.
Yeah, I think that because we're in high school and they're still immature kids, maybe while we're doing the presentation, they'll get up and walk out. But that's a reality of high school, and people are going to make it about gun control because that's what it's about. Like, we can say that it's not, and we're trying to put this mask over it to make it seem better. Broadway does not want to make it about gun control or anything else other than us promoting our students, us giving remembrance to those who died that day.
Again, Brooke Mormon.
I think we can all agree that what happened is terrible, and that can't keep happening, no matter if you're pro-gun or want gun control or et cetera. We all know that it wasn't okay, and this is just, like, I think a lot of people coming together to, like, not necessarily like, take a stand, but just to show that we, like, recognize that this can't keep happening.
Not far from Broadway, too, at the small private Eastern Mennonite Elementary School, students are planning a walkout for 4th and 5th graders. Here are 4th graders Nathan Pinio and Marshall Nichols.
We are going to sing songs, have prayers, and basically just remember the people who died in the incident.
What songs are you going to sing?
Our theme song, which is Jesus Help Us Live in Peace.
We just want to make sure that they understand that this is a big thing and it's very sad.
We just want to help stop, like, the shooting, like, from everyone, not just at school and those kids, like, everyone. We want this world to be lived in peace.
For WMRA News, I'm Christopher Clymer Kurtz.
There was a bit of a different vibe at Rockbridge High School, and WMRA's Jesse Nadler was there during that walkout on Wednesday.
Rockbridge County is pretty rural, the kind of place where a decent percentage of teenagers already own their own firearms for hunting. But that didn't stop about 250 of them from taking part in a nationwide protest of gun violence in schools yesterday.
Today marks the one-month anniversary of the shooting, which took place on February 14th, a day meant for expressions of love, but families instead lost the people they love.
18-year-old Catherine Brody, a senior, helped organize the event. Brody read each name of the 17 victims.
Alyssa Al-Hadef, 14 years old. Scott Beagle, 35.
It was followed by a moment of silence. Fellow organizer, senior Lulu West, then addressed the crowd.
We're here today to let Congress know we want to be safe in school. We want our friends to be safe in school, and we want our siblings to be safe in school.
The event served as a reminder that seniors will be casting their first ballots this November.
Yes, and register to vote! And then follow through and actually vote.
For WMRA News, I'm Jesse Nadler.
So far, we've heard from primary and secondary school kids, but some college students around the nation also participated in Wednesday's walkout, including an organized protest at the University of Virginia. WMRA's Emily Richardson Lorente was there.
It's about 35 degrees here and windy, but nearly 1,000 people have come to participate in this rally on the lawn at UVA. Sarah Kinney is student council president and helped organize this event.
This is our future, this is our country, and we can either be complacent or give it our best shot at making a difference.
The official walkout was scheduled for 17 minutes, enough time for the student council members lining the rotunda steps to recite the names of all 17 victims and to outline a handful of gun reform proposals in a sort of call and response with the crowd.
Enough is enough!
Of course, no one here really expects this event to lead to a change in the law.
No, but it can plant a seed.
Maurice Walker took time out of work to be here. He says this isn't just a feel-good event. It may be inspiring someone in the crowd.
You know, the folks who could become a congressman or could become a state delegate and decide, hey, we want to change laws. You just don't know.
One thing we do know, an event that appears to promote any type of gun control is contentious in this country. The student council actually got some pushback for planning it. To that, President Sarah Kinney says,
although this issue is contentious right now, I believe that we are on the right side of history.
For WMRA News, I'm Emily Richardson Lorente.
Now to another community event that happened on Wednesday. The United Way has started discussions with local nonprofits and others to come up with solutions to help those in the Harrisonburg area struggling to make ends meet. WMRA's Calvin Penn reports.
Community action groups have been putting their heads together to come up with ways to help Alice. Alice isn't a person, but rather the acronym for a group of people in the community who may be described as asset limited, income constrained, but employed. It's a portion of the population that earn an income above the federal poverty level, but less than the basic cost of living in the area. And that means households known as Alice struggle to afford the bare necessities. In Harrisonburg, 39% of the city's population falls within the Alice threshold. The study originated with the United Way in New Jersey, and soon other states followed with their own studies. Virginia's Alice report was released last year, weighing existing statistics including household incomes, as well as the cost of basic needs such as childcare, housing, transportation, and food. Laura Tony Holsinger, the executive director for the United Way of Harrisonburg and Rockingham County, said learning about the local Alice population was an eye-opener for her fellow United Way board members, who realized that Alice individuals were closer than they thought.
So I think a lot of people are realizing, you know, these are people that are in my life, whether they're in my coworkers or people that take care of my children or people that care for my older parent. They're people that we interact with. They're us. They're part of our community. Collaborative solutions are really the only way that we can make sure people have what they need to, what I like to say, meet their next milestone.
Those milestones could mean earning a high school diploma or GED, pursuing an advanced degree, moving up professionally, anything that could be seen as moving forward in life. To discuss those options, Tony Holsinger and other community leaders, local nonprofits, and community volunteers got together to discuss ways to help the Alice population find those options.
You can come up with some really interesting and creative solutions when you start to really have that cross-sector conversation.
That conversation happened Wednesday morning at the Rise Faith Community Center in downtown Harrisonburg. It included elected officials, members of local nonprofits such as Second Home, the Fairfield Center, and students and faculty from James Madison and Eastern Mennonite Universities. To generate ideas, the crowd of around 140 people broke into several groups.
One of the things that, you know, stick out from the Alice report for me is the idea of there's a poverty level that we think about, and that's what people say, but that's not really a living wage.
Aaron Hegmeyer with the Fairfield Center helped facilitate one of several groups in the room. With a variety of backgrounds present in each group, whiteboards filled up with suggestions for support programs ranging from childcare to home repairs to mental health. Among the people present were those who count themselves as part of the Alice population, including Brenda Miramontes, who is studying social work at Eastern Mennonite University. She said that community acknowledgement of their Alice neighbors would be the first ideal step to crafting solutions.
It's just learning. One of the people that we talked to, is like, they mentioned it's such an invisible issue that, you know, nobody's aware of it. And like, we want people to be aware of the situation.
A large portion of the Alice report addresses how a limited household income not only affects individuals and families, but also the community at large. Tony Holsinger said that with supportive programs in place, easing the distractions caused by financial hardship could mean an overall reduction in stress, not just for the individual, but for the community as well.
If we can take that burden off of families, that is huge. Think about how much more productive of an employee that person could be, how much more engaged that person could be in their child's school, how much more time they would have to care for an aging parent. And when you can take that burden off, people can think about what they want to be thinking about, which is life and work and family.
It's a complicated issue, and so the end of Wednesday's session marked the beginning of a conversation. The United Way plans to hold more community discussions in the near future, with the next one set tentatively for April 5th. More information can be found on the United Way of Harrisonburg and Rockingham County's website at uwhr.org. For WMRA News, I'm Calvin Penn.
And, of course, we provided a hyperlink to that and more information at wmra.org. To Buena Vista now, where a new welding school has been awarded $200,000 from the state. The grant will allow the school to help close a critical shortage of skilled welders across the country. Jesse Nadler takes a look at the new wave of welders who will fill a growing need for skilled tradesmen in the future.
Welding is a key part of nearly every major industry. Take the food industry. Raw materials, milk, beer, grains, whatever, flow down a pipe. If a weld in the pipe leaves a groove where bacteria can form, it can spoil the whole load. So the weld has to be perfect. Byers Incorporated is a heavy industrial and commercial contractor in Natural Bridge that works partially with food-grade piping. The brothers behind the company noticed that the quality of welders applying for positions weren't up to snuff. So they decided to open their own school so they could train welders to their own high standards. Enter Byers Technical Institute, a welding school outside Buena Vista that's been open since August. Today, a group of about 10 young guys are working on a weld. One woman is also enrolled in the school, but she wasn't around the day I visited. And this weld that they're working on, the integrity of it, will be measured by X-ray.
What are you working on?
Piece of pipe on 6G.
Is it hard, what you're doing?
Is it hard? Arguably the dumbest question you could ask a welder.
Not too bad.
X-ray detects any flaws from the surface of the weld all the way through to the root.
Walt Johnson is director of the school.
If a weld fails an x-ray, it has to be cut out and redone, so it can't even be put into service.
The school's debut comes at a great time. The industry faces a critical shortage of skilled welders, some 200,000 by 2020, according to the American Welders Society. Most welders are nearing retirement age. Byers Technical Institute, it's almost booked.
We sat down with some manufacturers and asked them what their needs were, and a lot of what we heard was lack of skilled labor.
Brandy Flint is with the Office of Community Development for Rockbridge County. She's part of the team that worked to expand course offerings at Byers by securing a $200,000 matching grant from Go Virginia. It's a statewide business-led coalition that seeks to grow existing businesses in the state.
That $200,000 that'll come from the grant will let us buy new equipment, more equipment. We'll be able to expand and add more training booths. We're going to be able to add a full-time instructor, add hours to a part-time instructor to help with our evening program.
As it is, Johnson says he's having a hard time keeping up with industry demand.
The companies are actually competing for highly skilled welding graduates right now.
And that leads to salaries. You can make real money in welding.
I would be disappointed if a student left here without a $50,000 or $60,000 job offer, and the potential to go all the way up into six digits is there.
The school's early success points to a tilt toward more high-skilled technical training. Rockbridge County High School students leaning toward the trades can take classes at Byers for credit. Flint again.
Once they graduate, they'll have about half of the program already done, so they can continue directly out of high school without having to go to a higher educational institute of like a four-year or a community college if they don't want to. They can continue on with the technical training.
If someone just really isn't sure what direction they're going in, they want to be able to provide for their family, if they'll come down and talk to us, we're about every student walking through the door, leaving back out the door with a job.
Jobs, it's what it's all about. And the icing on the cake, the Byers brothers in Natural Bridge get a steady supply of skilled welders. For WMRA News, I'm Jesse Nadler.
And now it's time to again check in with Richmond Times-Dispatch political commentator Jeff Shapiro, talking with Craig Carper at our partner station WCVE in Richmond.
Jeff, the legislature adjourned without a budget or a deal on Medicaid expansion. Now, Governor Ralph Northam has called a special session for April 11th for lawmakers to address both issues. Will they have a deal by then?
One is reluctant to say either way. Of course, we have a divided legislature, a Republican-controlled House supports Medicaid expansion. That represents a dramatic reversal from the House's position during the McAuliffe years. It fought the governor, Terry McAuliffe, that is, tooth and nail over Medicaid expansion. The Virginia Senate, with its Republican majority, is against expansion, particularly as presented by the Republican House, which added this work for benefits requirement. The Republicans in the Senate say it's anything but, it lacks teeth, and the Senate Republicans also underscore a theme often advanced by the House Republicans when they were again all this, that Virginia is again putting itself at some peril, that it would be needlessly dependent on a lot of federal money, about $2.5 billion by 2020, that the federal government could very well cut off. Governor Northam, of course, is all in on Medicaid expansion. He'd like a nice, clean program without this work requirement, but he's prepared to talk about it. And now, of course, that the regular session of the legislature is over, perhaps the governor is in a position to exercise a certain amount of leverage over some of these more recalcitrant Republicans, particularly the Republicans in the Senate. Now, the co-chairman of the Senate Finance Committee, Emmett Tanger, has always been considered a gimme on this. He's always favored Medicaid expansion. One of the reasons he doesn't like the House bill, in addition to that work for benefits requirement, the House version relies on what we're calling a sick tax that would be imposed by the hospitals. Tanger apparently believes that that would work a hardship on a big hospital up in his district, which is sitting squarely in the middle of the Shenandoah Valley.
And Jeff, this week, a suburban Pittsburgh congressional district captured the attention of the nation, where a Democrat appears to have narrowly defeated a Republican challenger for a district that President Donald Trump won by nearly 20 points.
In this cycle, Pennsylvania and Virginia have more in common than the fact that they are both commonwealths. The Republican loss in suburban Pittsburgh is a reminder that Donald Trump can be a millstone for Republicans. And last week, there was a poll by Christopher Newport University's Wasson Center that suggests trouble for Virginia Republican congressional incumbents, that another blue wave could hit the state, and that could mean problems for Barbara Comstock in Northern Virginia, a deeply blue Northern Virginia, for Scott Taylor in Hampton Roads, and of course, here in the Richmond area, for Dave Brat. The Democrats need 24 seats to take back the House. Dave Brat's district might be the 34th seat, but Brat's difficulty heading into the depth of this cycle is that the distaste for him is deepest in the suburban areas where the votes are most abundant. So we're going to get our money's worth here in Virginia this fall. If the Republicans can't come up with a credible candidate to take on Tim Kaine for the U.S. Senate, Kaine may run up a very big margin, and that could mean very long coattails, which could help Democratic challengers to Brat, Taylor, and Comstock.
Thanks to Jeff Shapiro, political columnist at the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Jeff, we will catch up again next week.
Support for WMRE's News and Information Fund, which makes our award-winning coverage possible, is provided by Bibb and Dolly Frazier, Les and Johnny Grady, Klein May Realty, Eugene Stoltzfus Architects, Joy Loving, Janet Trettner, Nancy Barber, Pam and Jim Huggins, an anonymous donor, and by a grant from a donor-advised fund of the Community Foundation of Harrisonburg and Rockingham County. Learn more about all our reports and how to help fund them at WMRA.org. Please don't forget to make your voice heard during our spring fund drive. We are entering our second week of the drive tomorrow. Support the news. Become a part of our mission with your contribution at WMRA.org. And here's a great way to keep up with local and statewide news each day with WMRA. Subscribe to the Daily News Podcast. It's called the WMRA Daily. And get a news update on your smartphone every weekday morning. Find out how at WMRA.org. I'm Bob Levicky, WMRA's news director and morning edition host. I'll talk to you in the morning. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday.